Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Janet Foster Show, the show where you can get real talk to act on. And, today is Primary Tuesday. This is the first contest of will be a big month this year and potentially can be the pivoting turning point for both parties in terms of the nominations. You've got the two front runners in both parties, Trump for the Republicans and Clinton for the Democrats. And they could potentially lock up these nominations right now. As we've come on the air, the polls in Wisconsin, today is the Wisconsin primary. It's the only state in the union that has a primary today. And 6 p.m. Pacific time here in California is when the polls close. And pretty soon we should have results coming in. And certainly we want... We want to answer your questions. I'm going to answer your questions. You guys have been so cool and so great at reaching out in terms of giving me your questions either while we're on air. And Lovey had a lot of compliments for our guests that we had last week. And we will have the replay of that show this week, later this week. And as well as tonight, if because what I'm getting a lot of love from and I really appreciate it is from high school seniors, some of you who will be voting for the first time you are either working on projects in school right now. And certainly I enjoy the interaction during the week. So bring it on. Feel free to continue to tweet me and send me messages on Instagram. Anything that I can help you with, answer or if you, and I really appreciate that you, the listeners, that you are interested in my analysis. And I, you know, I've always been upfront with you in terms of where I stand politically, but also give an objective view, not only as a journalist, but also as someone who I consider myself to be a pragmatist, and especially with politics. You know, I love keeping it real and realistic. That's when I say I'm keeping it real, I'm keeping it realistic. And I like some of the discourse and some of the exchange that I've had with a lot of people. And I want to do some quick shout outs to Instagram, because again, Instagram, you guys, you always tell me that I forget about you. So I want to do that. And I apologize to everyone. I am working with a little voice challenge today, but we're going to make it work today. I want to just shout out to Rebrand America. Thank you so much for your comments and your questions, because some of the questions that I'm going to answer today came from you. Millennial Week, you always hold me down. Thank you so much. President Doodle, thank you. Thank you for joining the study hall too. And thank you for your love on Instagram. And Katie Sylvia, thank you so much. And James Loves Freedom, thank you. And Brian Gerard, thank you so much for your support. And also telling a friend, because I noticed that you've told some friends, and I appreciate that too. And certainly, if at any time you miss this live version of the show, wherever you are, you can certainly download past shows and check us out here at the We Play Radio family, or where you listen locally. Please feel free to do that. And with that said, we're going to just some key things that are going on, some current events. Today, and even yesterday, sad chain of events have gone on before we get into the primary results that I have to bring up. Here on the West Coast, we don't understand this kind of stuff, but what seems to be vogue back east, and particularly in the South, is anti-gay laws. North Carolina, with their legislature, passing an anti-gay law, and this is going to hurt that state's economy in the long run. And it was officially determined earlier this week that state is, we constantly have something called red states, blue states. That state is officially purple, which means that it tends to be more moderate, which I know, here in California, California is kind of labeled as liberal, but I think for the most part, California is considered moderate. I say moderate to progressive, moderate on most things and progressive on some things. And when Californians are progressive, I think it's more of we are willing to look at solutions that may be new at addressing issues. We're not tied to something old, tried and true. We're progressive in the sense of thinking that coming up with something new and innovative to either address a problem or create solutions to some solutions. Whereas being moderate can also be the status quo is okay. You just might need to enhance it. Californians tend to be a little bit more moderate to progressive, just as a description to us. But when you look at the state of North Carolina, and we had a guest, Thomas Mills, who really broke it down, broke the politics down, the history of the politics in the state for us. He broke it down for us, and he actually, what we just saw in the news this week, he actually gave us precursors to seeing how that happens. With their legislature, they have a Republican governor, and the Republicans control their state legislature. And these are the kinds of laws and the kinds of behaviors that are going to be prevalent when you have these extreme views. And in this show, we have had guests who are Republicans, Democrats, Greens, Independents. And one of the things that I think all of our guests have had in common has been that they are for realistic solutions and not these extreme measures. And North Carolina, I have to say, that legislature has really screwed it up. And already what's happening, a California-based company, PayPal, we know it here in California. We're like, oh yeah, that company up in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley. They're tied to eBay. We know that we were using PayPal before it was cool, and they had plans to expand in the state of California. Well, as a result of the passage of this law, they have pulled out, and I think rightfully so. And I predict that there are going to be other companies following suit. And I think, just to put it lightly, I think it was a very bonehead move by the North Carolina legislature to do something like that, because in the tech industry, something that you have to realize in the knowledge economy, the knowledge economy depends on a very educated and a very special skill set of individuals. And, for that legislature to be so backwards, in a state that is known for its academic institutions, just it slays me to begin with that this is even happening. But and our guest, I just never forget what our guest, Mr. Mills, when he shared with us, he just said that there are just some areas of North Carolina that haven't had enough funerals, quote unquote. And I'm not laughing at death, but we all know that people of a certain age lived in a certain time when when it was vogue to to treat people inhumanely. And the vestiges of that kind of behavior happened in the North Carolina legislature, and it's being cloaked. It's being cloaked under as if it's religious, and it's not. It has nothing to do with religion. And I challenge anyone who's listening from the state of North Carolina, if you claim to be a Christian, how in the world could you support something like this? And what it's going to do to your state, it's going to further kill your economy. Your economy is already battered because you used to be a manufacturing state. You know, North Carolina was known for its number one industry in manufacturing was furniture. Some of our millennials may not know that, because by the time you were born, a lot of those factories were closed in North Carolina. But Gen Xers, a few of us know that. I know I have personal experience from that because I have relatives who worked in some of those furniture factories as well. And then the number two manufacturing industry was the textile, the mills. And, my own grandmother worked at one of the mills down there in Boulder City, North Carolina. And, a lot of those mills in North Carolina, they started closing, and a lot of it happened. A lot of it was advantageous for a lot of these owners to close these mills. A lot of these mills, owners of these mills made money when they closed. They made more money when they closed those mills and continue to draw off of that. But then you have a legislature that it's obvious that the North Carolina legislature is incompetent, where they can't create any jobs. They certainly can't do it in the knowledge sector now, because when you've got big companies like PayPal, and why this is such a big deal is, I don't know if you noticed, but we're starting to go to a currency-free a way of payment. And that's big. That's huge. For a company like PayPal to say, at one point they had planned on expanding in that state, and now that they have scrapped their plans, you better believe other companies are going to do it. And any companies that do business in that state, they're going to have trouble with other companies that that basically don't want to do business in North Carolina. This is going to be huge. And I really want to hear from listeners from North Carolina and give me your take. And not only what we are about this show, just don't complain about it. Come up with something that you're going to do about it. And definitely let me know if there are a group of activists who are pulling something together to not only oust, because you got to get rid of these people in your legislature. I don't care how you do it. And I know our guest, Mr. Mills, he had said that there were few remedies for residents to deal with members of the legislature. I just think where there's a will, there is a way. People who are about doing the right thing rise up in North Carolina, because this is going to cost you. It's going to cost you in terms of your population. You're going to have another population shift. You've got those awesome academic institutions. I mean, the University of North Carolina was just in the Final Four. Some are saying it's kind of karma about this law being passed, that maybe why the Tar Heels lost to Villanova. It could be. It very well could be. Definitely, you've got these awesome academic institutions that are known to be top flight in terms of competitive enrollment, hard to get into, and then you can't retain your educated you know, the people that are coming to your state, whether, because a lot of people come from out of state to obtain those degrees. Well, you're creating an environment in your state with your wacky legislature where people don't want to stay there. They're going to come, they're going to get their degrees, and then they're going to go elsewhere. And your state's going to basically be a place where the ignorant thrive. And we don't want that. And I know that not everybody in the state of North Carolina is a college graduate, and I'm not saying that they are ignorant, but the types of jobs, when you're talking about a company like PayPal, who's coming in and trying to create white collar jobs, high level jobs, you need people who have a certain dollar amount to spend in your community. As a college graduate, I can't emphasize enough the importance of a college education. It doesn't guarantee you a job, but it darn well sure puts you in placement to be able to be qualified for those top jobs. And, PayPal is trying to bring top jobs, top-notch jobs to North Carolina, and you've got a legislature that's tripping like this. And particularly in the tech world, this can dovetail into other things because, you know, with a company like PayPal, there are, in business, there are other complement industries that kind of follow certain companies. You're starting to close yourself off from a reasonable public to be unreasonable. And the fact, though, that North Carolina has basically became a state that will discriminate openly among people, it's just wrong. And I know the city of San Francisco has come out and said that they will no longer sponsor any type of business trips or anything. And that's going to hurt some of your academic institutions, because I do know that, I think it's the School of Business there at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, they have a lot of executive business coaching. Well, it's going to start to hit revenue of that school. And, it is a public institution, so the legislature is responsible to that. It's a big old mess. It seems to keep getting messier and messier by the day in North Carolina. So I definitely want you listeners to keep watch out on that. And for you in North Carolina, rise up, because this is going to affect you, because the tech industry tends to hire younger employees, and you want younger people in your community, because you need the influx of that income. Younger people spend more money than older people. Generally, I mean, in any basic economic course you've ever taken, fortunately, yours truly minored in economics. People generally, in terms of spend, generally, once people turn the age of 55, it's normal to have a downtrend in your spending. But for people 25 up to 49, those are the prime spending. When you start with discrimination laws like this, and you're not able to attract businesses that can pay people a certain amount of wage that will not only guarantee your state a certain amount of income, but also you're going to have individuals that are going to have additional income, additional discretionary income, but also, with white collar workers, there's the potential for individuals to settle and buy homes in an area, which can stabilize communities, stabilize public schools, and things of that nature that are beneficial for the state. And with that anti-gay law, North Carolina, you just screwed it up. But you're not alone, North Carolina. As of today, another state in the South, the state of good old Mississippi. I tell you, the South, they aren't kidding when they say the South will rise again. The South is rising again with foolishness. Excuse me. today, the governor of Mississippi, he signed a bill guaranteeing the denial of service for gays and trans individuals. Now, that it astounds me that something even made it, that got passed. The fact that it got passed in the legislature and the fact that it went to a governor's desk and that governor had the unmitigated gall to sign it and parade it as if it's an accomplishment for him. Some of the same problems that North Carolina will experience, it's going to happen threefold for Mississippi. And Mississippi is already ranked the worst in terms of quality of life in the United States, in terms of poverty levels. So, you know, you would think that there are more constructive things in the state of Mississippi that they can work on, like increasing their education, their public education, and bolstering some kind of appropriate education levels to attract white collar jobs. You know, you don't attract white collar jobs with this kind of legislation. And also, you don't have, in the state of Mississippi, they don't have the, even for high school graduates, it's so bad in that state that they don't attract a minimum of qualified basic skilled applicants for jobs. But they chose not to work on that. They chose to basically make vogue again discrimination of gays and the trans community, and I just hope and I want any listeners from Mississippi, reach out to me on Twitter, Instagram, or on the Facebook page, because I want to talk to you about this and find out what kind of activists, because usually in states like Mississippi, it's kind of quiet in terms of activism. And I think a lot of it has to do with that state's unfortunate, very dark history that a lot of people don't want to talk about, that's pretty consistent in the South. You know, some areas of the South are a little bit more open about talking about their histories of slavery and also some of the intentional laws. And this in Mississippi, it's just plain brazen at what was done today. And this was, I mean, this week has been crazy in terms of discrimination. And I just want to also let listeners know, because this has been a question that people have asked me in particular a lot about my thoughts about, in terms of the election, how, what kind of factor will the LGBT community, specifically the trans community, what kind of role will they have in the election? I think that they will have a very strong role along with the Latino community. Right now, the Latinos, they are what I call the sleeping giant. We're about to see them show out pretty soon, pretty soon in these primaries, in the primary states that are coming up, because the majority of where the Latino community resides. We saw snippets of it in Texas, but of course, in Texas, they tend to be more rooted in Mexican. The diaspora that they're rooted more into is more in the Mexican, I think predominantly Mexican, which was pretty predictable that that demographic within the Latino diaspora is basically going to do anything to stay away from Donald Trump. That has been quite clear. But what's going to be very interesting in the next couple of weeks is seeing where with New York, with which has the next largest, the next largest population of Latinos in the United States, in terms of multiple diasporas, where there's a good mix of both. And when I say multiple areas within the diaspora, I'm talking about not just Puerto Rican, but also Dominican. We're talking about there is a very small Cuban community, not as large, but there is in the tri-state area, mainly in New York and in New Jersey. When we talk about Cubans, but largely it is Dominican, Puerto Rican, and then you have some areas of South America and Central America located. And it's almost like the parts of the diaspora that are similar to Miami. But with the difference in New York is it's a little bit more spread out through the five boroughs, whereas in Miami, in Florida, it's mostly concentrated in the greater Miami, and pretty much it's certain sections of Dade County in Miami. We're going to see that also a growing, upwardly mobile Latino community in Maryland. And that's going to be very, I think, very interesting and very telling at how the election is going to roll for both parties along that line. But I do think the LGBT community is going to be quite active. And a lot of you have asked me my thoughts about Kate, and I've watched it every week, and they're on this bus, and they went to the Iowa caucuses, and my view, and I want to stay on the politics, but I love the other ladies. Right now, I am not digging Kate, just from the standpoint of someone who is a supporter and advocate of the LGBT community. I consider myself an ally. I consider myself what I call a ride or die ally for the LGBT community and the trans community. And I'm down with the community, but I'm just not feeling Caitlyn Jenner right now. And a lot of it, I get that this transition for her has just happened, but I think that there are just some aspects of her transition. I think that she should have transitioned first before allowing us to see it. I think that she tends to be too oblivious to a lot of problems that what I consider people who are living in reality, just like, in North Carolina and in Mississippi, Caitlyn Jenner won't be affected by these laws. Caitlyn Jenner will try to walk in these states and try to roll through, and Caitlyn Jenner will play her privilege card. And it's and I don't mean this to be offensive to the trans community, but I think Caitlyn is Caitlyn sometimes, but she's Bruce other times. I know for individuals who are in transition, referring to the dead personality is just the former individual is disrespectful. And I'm not doing it to be disrespectful of Caitlyn, but I'm concerned about her her exploiting herself as a means to claim that she's creating awareness about the trans community, because Caitlyn's not, but the other ladies on the bus are. And Candace, I've loved Candace forever, And I, until I saw Being Kate, I didn't know that she was trans. And I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't know she was trans, but she's a great actress. And love her. And Shandy. Shandy has become my favorite. And what I like about Shandy is she really keeps it 100. And I think she really, and I also feel like, too, she might have Caitlin's ear a little bit more than anybody else. And I really hope that, because every now and then Shandy will break something down and keep it 100 and remind Caitlin how, you know, girlfriend, you're living in your foo-foo world, but this is how it really is. You know, to answer the question that was asking me, I do think that the LGBT community is going to be a strong, I think a strong constituency, and it's going to, and the community is going to roll blue. And for the most part, in the circles that I have interviewed within the LGBT community, they are rolling strong with Hillary. And particularly when you've got some of these legislators, these state legislators that are running with these stupid kinds of laws, you're going to need somebody who... you're going to need somebody with some real negotiation skills that are going to be able to, you know, make some phone calls. And that community seems to, they have been a very loyal, Democratic constituency. And I just see them sticking with the registered Democrat, because that's the latest thing now. And I know some listeners who are Bernie supporters, that's the latest thing. Most people are just like, I'm going with the registered Democrat. And, and that's how I see the LGBT community participating. And it's based on to the circles of individuals that I've interviewed for other stories and for other news outlets that I've covered. Now, getting on to tonight's result, the polls have closed in Wisconsin, and we have some results, and it looks like with 6% of the votes that are in. It looks like, though, it's being called for Cruz, and it's kind of close, though. And so I don't know if they've finished counting. The data source that I'm using, I don't know if they've gotten all of the absentee ballots counted, and they're going through electronics voting. But as it stands right now, Cruz has 49.6% of the vote, and Trump has 34%, and Kasich has 14% for the Republicans. And interesting enough, if you've been watching some of the major news coverage, people just kind of talk about it being a two-person race. Versus, and they've counted out, Governor Kasich, and he has not folded his campaign. He hasn't paused it. He still has delegates, and he's still in the game. And actually, I think if people are still supporting him, I think he would still be good as a spoiler. But Wisconsin has been called for Cruz, and in terms of the delegate counts, it's 42 delegates that Cruz has picked up, and this is winner take all, so there's no splitting for Republicans. And on the Democratic side here, we're gonna get their results, and right now they haven't called the Democratic side yet, and still with 6%, and the reporting is right now Bernie Sanders is leading with 56.7% of the vote, and Hillary is right now at 43%. And there are 86 delegates at stake in this race, but based on the Democratic Party's policies and procedures, This isn't a winner take all. This is these delegates will be split between the two. So this isn't a winner, a winner take all state. So the wins will be proportionate based on the number of votes. So if Sanders stays, he'll get 50. Let's say round up. If he's got 56.8%, he'll get 57% of those delegates, and that's pretty much how they divide up the delegates. So both candidates will walk away with delegates. And just to refresh everybody on the numbers, the magic numbers that for both parties, for the Republicans to win the nomination, of the Republican that gets to 1,237 votes first clinches the nominee. If they get either 1,237 flat total or anything above that, whichever candidate gets it first, they will clinch the nomination because it will be mathematically impossible for anybody else to come in for that. And for Democrats, the number for Democrats needed to clinch the nomination is 2,383. And right now up for grabs are still 2,042. And Hillary Clinton started tonight with 1,712 delegates. And Bernie started with 1,011 votes and 1,011 delegates. And that will continue to be added on as the night goes along. 7% of the polls are reporting, and still no call for the Democratic race as of yet. But with the Republicans, the race has been called, and Ted Cruz is one, and the number and Ted Cruz is catching up. Trump is still the front runner. And Trump has, I think it's, he still has 737 electoral votes. And Cruz has now with the win in Wisconsin, he has 523 votes. So he's still behind Trump. Trump is still winning. And Kasich has 143. And what's still out is delegates that were earned by Marco Rubio. He still is holding on to his delegates. So potentially, I see if Cruz wants to overtake Trump, he may cut a deal. That's an idea. And, all week long, we've been hearing, especially in media circles, we've been hearing about a potential floor nomination, which that can happen. And I know some of you younger first-time voters are, you've asked about this, and I've kind of given you high level. In the next couple of weeks, I am going to do a breakdown of each party's rules and regs, because I think some people, when you register, particularly if you register as a Republican or a Democrat, I think there's an assumption of what you think your role is with the party. And then independents, for some reason, there's been this increasingly demanding attitude from independents, which I don't really understand it. I'm pretty much, from a journalist standpoint, I'm pretty much thinking it's because maybe these individuals don't know as independent. Because you choose to be independent, especially in states that have closed primaries, you don't have a say because you're not a part of the party. And I think there are some independents that think that their rights are being violated, but your rights not being violated. You had the right to elect either when you registered to vote. That is your right to register, to be able to register to vote. But in party elections, and I know some people tend to think that the taxpayer pays everything. But what you don't understand is with these primaries, political parties pay for this. There are costs tied to this because you have to pay to be on the ballot, and that's tied in whatever the fees are. And if you can't pay the fees, you don't have this. That's why there are so many other, I don't want to say alternative parties, but there are other parties that they're real parties that they don't have primaries like this because they either can't afford it. Whereas the Democratic Party and the Republican parties, those parties pay to be on these ballots. And that's something that I think a lot of independents seem to forget about that. And so when these primaries are coming up that are bankrolled by these, by these parties, because they paid for it. They paid for the ballot placements and whatever the fees of each state, whatever it costs to be tied to having these primaries based on their party requirements for the nomination. That's why some states have caucuses and some states have primaries. But both parties pay for this. It's understandable that that independents wouldn't be a part of this because you're not either or. You either need to be a Republican or a Democrat. And I know that there are some states that do semi-open, which those are, I prefer those where you can go to the poll, but you have to state, you have to ask for the ballot. You can't choose for both. You either say, I'm going to vote for the Democrat or I'm going to vote for the Republican. And like here in California, we've got that crazy open primary where they do top two. But I really wish we would go back to a closed primary here in California, because Democrats are Democrats, Republicans are Republicans, and independents or people who decline to state, you choose not to pick a side. And it's and that's just the way it should be. And that's why I think some people forget that. But what we're going to do is we're going to go over some of the parties with their platform issues and their requirements, because I think a lot of people may not realize that. And I noticed that in a lot of political circles, particularly in the Democrats, the discussion with Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders has been an independent, and he requested permission to run in the Democrat primary. And, individuals, and we're going to profile individuals working on his national team, because that's very different, because those individuals have not been very versed with working with the Democratic electorate. And I think that's why there's been a lot of tension in terms of, with Bernie being one way, but his staff maybe doing something another way. And as of late, his campaign manager has been in the news a lot, and he's been in the news a lot in a bad way. It hasn't been a good way for him. And that will be interesting. But coming up in the next primaries, we do have some big dates. And just to give you an update on Wisconsin, Wisconsin still hasn't been called yet. There hasn't been any calls yet, but Bernie is still in the lead. His lead has shrunk a little bit. He went from 56%. He's down to 53.2%. Clinton has picked up a little bit. She's at 46.6%. And there are 21% of the precincts reporting. And again, this is proportionate of delegates being awarded. So, and the polls have been closed in Wisconsin for 45 minutes. So there may be an update. But on the Democratic side, in terms of primaries coming up, this on April 9th, the next primary is coming up, and that's Wisconsin. 14 delegates are at stake there. And then we got the big one. This is the one where I think that's going to start the road for shutting it down. The Democrats are going to have their candidate, and that's going to be New York. New York is on April 19th, and there are 247 delegates at stake. And it's expected, Secretary Clinton, former U.S. Senator for New York, did right by that state. For her to win that puts her well over what she needs to clinch the nomination. And then April 26th, for some reason, if there's a split with some of the delegates in New York, April 26th, this is another showdown. For that one, it's already being dubbed as Super Tuesday Part 3. April 26th, you've got five states. You have Connecticut with 55 delegates at stake. Delaware, 21 delegates at stake. Maryland, 95 delegates. And remember I said the sleeping giant, kind of a growing Latino community there in Maryland. Rhode Island, 24 delegates at stake. And then another big one, Pennsylvania, 189 delegates. And particularly in Pennsylvania, Hillary Clinton is leading in Pennsylvania. And all of these states that are coming up on Super Tuesday, they are split. They are split votes. But it's in a lot of politicos, in the inside circles that I've talked to, they expect the Democratic nomination to be locked up by April for sure. And still no final call on Wisconsin for the Democrats. But looking at activity for the Republicans in the coming weeks, after today, and it looks like after today, it seems like the next primary for Republicans is New York. So they're doing it at the same time with the Democrats in New York, and then their next big delegate voting primaries are on April 26th as well. Connecticut, Delaware, let's see, for Republicans, Connecticut has 28 delegates. Delaware, they have 16 delegates at stake. Maryland, 38. Pennsylvania, 17. Rhode Island, 19. And something that, just an update on Wisconsin, with 23% of the precincts reporting, right now, they still have call it for Cruz, but they are, for the total delegates that are at stake, so far they've only awarded him 24 of those delegates. So he's sitting at 505. They haven't awarded him all of the possible delegates there. And not really sure why. There's nothing coming up on the wires saying why. Maybe it's because it's only at 23%. And since it's in thinking of it, if it's 23% and it is a winner take all, maybe that number will climb as the number of precincts reporting will continue. So we'll definitely watch that one. And still for Wisconsin, okay, Wisconsin, they've called it for Bernie. In Bernie, and they were waiting for, I think, a lot of the large Democratic strongholds in terms of, I think, the urban area, urban votes. And he will get at least 53% of the delegates, and Hillary will get 46%. So they both walk away with delegates. Hillary is still ahead. Even if with 40% of those delegates, she's still ahead going into the Wyoming primary, which is April 9th, and then going into New York. So Senator Sanders has won Wisconsin, which it was predicted. It was predicted to be pretty close. Between the two, and Wisconsin is one of those states. It's a swing state, and it's similar to Michigan. So the fact that Sanders won Michigan, that there wasn't a surprise with that one, with that state. What will be a surprise is if Senator Sanders does something in New York. That will be interesting because the key capstone of the Sanders campaign has been the complaints about Wall Street. So, and New York is Wall Street, no matter what part, whether it's upstate or in New York City. And some of the delegates have been awarded now in Wisconsin. Bernie picks up 44 delegates and Hillary picks up 28 delegates. So the count now, Hillary Clinton is still in the lead with 1,740 delegates, and Bernie Sanders now has 1,055 delegates. So that's been pretty much Wisconsin is pretty much a wrap tonight. So, you know, let me know your thoughts about that. And, you know, hit me up on Instagram, and Twitter at janet.d.foster. And certainly you can hit me up on Facebook at Janet Foster. And like always, everyone, feel free, hit me up during the week. You know, questions, and also, you know, we post the top news story, top trending news story, whether it's in the U.S. or worldwide. Feel free to give us comments there. And I'd also like to thank Jeremy Hansen for helping make everything go. And thank you all for listening and for all of your support. And have a great week. And we'll see you next week, same time, same place, right here.